Please, no talking, no food or drinks. I think we kept most of it out. Please take your hats off. I think I only saw one hat. I see one there. Please take that off. No gum snapping. If you're sitting next to somebody that's snapping gum, do what you need to do to make them stop that nasty habit. Please turn your cell phones off. We've already talked about this. I won't say what school it was, but we were in this exact room last year. Somebody's alarm went off. So if your cell phone's turned to silent, your alarm will still go off. Please turn that off. And for all intents and purposes right now, this is now a courtroom. Please treat it as such. Thank you.
All right.
Thank you. You may be seated. And good morning to everyone, especially all of you students out there. And thank you to the University of Nebraska College of Law for hosting us today. We will begin with introductions from the court. I am Mike Havikin, the Chief Justice, and now, by order of seniority as to service on the court, the other members of the court will introduce themselves.
Good morning, Lindsay
Miller-Lorman. William Castle, good morning.
Stephanie Stacy, good morning.
Good morning, I am Jeff Funk.
I'm Jonathan Patrick, good morning.
And John Freidenberg.
Thank you, members of the court. Our first case today is Cure versus Cure. Mr. Stellick, good morning to you.
Good morning.
And do I have this correct? Is it Ms. Carney?
That is correct.
Good morning to you. Do either counsel have any questions before we begin?
Sir, it's a little intimidating being here, not in front of you all, but in front of all the law students.
I'm sure you will be up to it, Mr. Stellick.
Absolutely. Thank you.
I have no questions other than, are you all sure you want to do this?
Thank you very much then, Mr. Stelick. You may approach and you may proceed.
Thank you. May I begin?
You may.
Thank you. Good morning. My name is Mitchell Stelick. I represent the appellant, Justin Cure. This case was a modification of a divorce decree focusing solely on issues related to custody and visitation. The parties were divorced in March of 2013. There was one child from that divorce. Primary physical custody of the child at that time was given to the appellee, and the parties had joint legal custody. The record that you'll see indicates that prior to the original dissolution and significantly thereafter, it was a very contentious relationship. I think that the record indicates there were some contempt actions and just general disagreement throughout. In November 2020, my client filed an ex parte action and a complaint to modify arising out of an incident that occurred with the minor child and the appellee in her home. That ex parte order was granted and at that time ordered no visitation between the appellee and the minor child. That was then modified in December to allow some to allow for some supervised visitation. And then again in April 2021 to allow for unsupervised visitation on an every other weekend basis. The November 2020 incident was one involving alcohol. The minor child had, the details of the incident were somewhat unclear. The court did receive the police reports without objection. But the incident occurred, minor child runs to a grandparent's house, was scared, the appellee follows, enters the grandparents' house, and the evidence was that she was being pretty aggressive. Appellee was charged with a couple of crimes in two different counties resulting from this incident, and at the time of trial was still on probation. So trial then is not held for some time. I think it was at least a full year, I believe, before we had trial in this case. The minor child finished her school year in the district where she was living, which was in the Northwest District, but it was the St. Laborie School, which is a smaller town outside of Grand Island, and then started the next school year in the Grand Island Public Schools, which is where the appellant lived. The evidence that the court received indicated that throughout the process after the temporary modification and the time of trial that Appley was just, I would say, generally disagreeable, refusing to provide medical information for the minor child to the appellant, refusing to follow recommendations made by doctors that the appellant had taken the minor child to, refusing to cooperate on getting the child registered at school. And she testified at trial that she was generally unwilling to set aside differences that she has with the appellant for the best interest of the minor child. Appley conceded at the time of trial that she has issues with alcoholism, but she contended essentially that she had properly addressed those issues.
Did the court find that she had significantly and immediately addressed the issues?
The court found that she did, and we disagree with the court's conclusion thereto.
What more should she be doing to maintain her sobriety, to be fit?
Well, first of all, the evidence that was presented by the appellee included testimony from her counselor that says, well, she's doing everything we would ask her to do. But then on cross-examination, the counselor acknowledged that she had not was not aware that the appellee was diagnosed and had continuing medication for ADHD, anxiety disorder, and bipolar disorder.
Was she seeing a different counselor for medication management on those issues?
I don't recall what the record shows on that. It is fair to say that Ms. Stoom, the counselor that was testifying, was not treating her for those issues.
Thank you.
But our contention is it'd be tough for the counselor to determine whether or not these issues are being adequately addressed without knowing the full medical history. And in fact, if stuff's being withheld, I would contend she doesn't have the full picture of what's going on. The evidence also...
I beg your pardon, is this a finding of fact? Did it depend on credibility, or do you assert that the trial court used some improper legal standards?
I don't I don't believe that they used, that the trial court used an improper legal standard. We contend...
Did the judge refer, maybe I misread this, to a temporary change?
Yes, the court, so what the trial court applied a standard that there had been a temporary change in her circumstances, but that it was not, it was merely transitory, I think was the language that he cited from this court. We contend, though, that it wasn't just temporary or transitory. We contend that it's an ongoing issue, is what our argument is. And I think that the evidence indicated that that is the case. So there was testimony from the appellee's brother.
Under the standard that the judge used, is this a requirement that the child has to be abused on more than one occasion to actually find a motion for grounds for a motion to modify?
I don't know that I believe that's what the trial court intended, at least. I suppose one could argue that, but I don't think that's what the trial court intended. I do believe the trial court probably bought the argument of the appellee that she had properly addressed the alcoholism issue.
So is that a credibility issue?
I acknowledge that some of it's a credibility issue, and I realize that this court has to give a lot of deference to the trial court's determination on that.
What is our standard of review?
This is abuse of discretion on this particular case, which is why I was a little bit surprised it made it to the Supreme Court, but it is an abuse of discretion standard for this court.
And that's one of our higher burdens?
Yes, sir.
Are you familiar with Section 43-2932 regarding domestic abuse findings and custody matters?
Yes, I am, Your Honor.
Did the court comply with that?
I think the court ultimately determined that there was not domestic abuse, is what I or not abuse of the child. I think what the court, we contended, and I think our initial pleading indicated that there had been a physical assault. I think the testimony indicated that while there not had been a physical assault, there had been certainly instances that caused a lot of concern and fear for the minor child. So.
Didn't the court specifically make a finding that the appellee had assaulted the child and then assaulted others in the presence of the child?
I believe that the court, the court certainly didn't make a finding that that did occur. I don't recall if the court specifically found that that did not occur, but there was
no... What did she plead guilty to? What criminal charges?
That was a reduced charge for, I believe it was disturbing the peace, or it was a significantly reduced charge, I'll acknowledge
initially
that.
Charged as child abuse?
I think there was a child abuse charge, and then there might have been a trespassing charge, and then there was some kind of an assault charge in a different county, but that didn't occur in front of the child, and I don't know that charge ever proceeded as well. So the one she was on probation for was a significantly reduced charge of, I believe, disturbing the peace, or something similar to that from Howard County. But our argument is, though, that it was not merely transitory. The brother of the appellee testified that she always had had cycles with alcoholism and issues related to alcoholism. There was evidence of incidents that occurred, I believe, in 2013, 2014, 2018, and then this incident in 2020.
Those were all after the decree was entered?
I don't think the 2013 incident
decree
was
entered what year?
I believe it was 2013. The 2013 incident, I think at the time of trial, we weren't certain necessarily if that occurred before or after, and frankly found out about it at the time of trial, so that's part of why we weren't entirely certain. But there certainly were several other cycles of incidents we contend that occurred after that. So. We disagree with the trial court's determination that there was not.
Does the best interest of the child come into this equation somewhere?
Yes.
And where is that?
Well, the court first has to determine that there has been a substantial change in circumstances. The trial court determined that there had not been. We contend that that was an error. And then once that substantial change has been determined, the court then has to make a best interest finding as in a normal custody case.
Did the court do that here?
The trial court did determine that even if he had found that there had been a substantial change in circumstances, he argued that the best interest of the child would be best placed with the appellee. We also disagree with that finding. As I explained in our brief, there was evidence that my client, the appellant, got the child into counseling updated medical and dental care, followed through with prescribed medication, got her involved in tutoring, and that the child was excelling when she was living with the appellant. So I thought that more so than other cases where the child hadn't been living with them, we were able to prove, in fact, it was a very good situation when she was living with the appellant. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Ms. Carney, good morning to you again, and you may approach and you may proceed.
Thank you. May it please the court, opposing counsel, members of the gallery, my name is Jennifer Carney. I'm with the Bradley Law Office out of Grand Island, Nebraska, and I represent the appellee, Jennifer Cure. I'm not going to belabor the facts too much. I think Mr. Stellick did an excellent job of summarizing them. There are a few facts I would like to point out. There was an incident that involved my client in November of 2020. She was arrested. She was charged with child abuse. That charge was later pled down to a disturbing the peace. Following that charge, however, my client immediately sought treatment. She attended Seekers of Serenity, where she successfully completed that program. She was then ordered from that program to complete aftercare, which she did with Nadine Stewem. She did therapy with Nadine Stewem, who is a licensed clinical social worker and a teacher at UNL, who is also a LADAC, a licensed alcohol and drug counselor. She completed treatment and completed therapy with Ms. Stewem over the course of the year that this case was pending. During the time that this case was pending, Ms. Cure did go from a supervised visitation standard, which I think would answer the question of Justice Frudenberg, that yes, the court did follow the proper procedures under the statute by making that visitation start as supervised. We were then able to modify that as of April for that visitation to become unsupervised, and she had regular visitation with her child throughout the course of time that this case was pending. We believe that the court was correct in its determination that this was a transitory situation and not a material change of circumstances for several reasons. Number one, despite Mr. Stellick's assertion that there was a pattern of behavior, there was no evidence at trial that any of the behaviors other than the November 2020 incident affected or occurred in front of the minor child. In fact, the incidents that were referred to by Mr. Stellick were all incidents that occurred when the minor child was not in the physical custody of the biological mother, Ms. Cure. Additionally,
does that make them irrelevant?
I don't believe it makes them irrelevant, but I do believe that it is informative of the court's inquiry as to whether or not this was a long-standing situation. The incidents that were referred to were actually mental health crises as opposed to alcohol-related incidents. And the material change of circumstances that were alleged in the complaint in this action were the material change of circumstances of substance abuse by my client.
Wasn't there also an allegation that there was untreated and unresolved mental health issues?
I do believe that that was an allegation, but I don't think the appellant was able to actually prove that that material change of circumstance existed. The testimony at trial was that my client had treated and maintained her mental health illness and had minor incidents prior to the hearing, but she had corrected all of those by attending therapy, working with a medication management doctor, doing everything that we would expect a parent to do, which is exactly what she did in this case as well. After the incident with her child, when she immediately checked herself into treatment, she got out of treatment. Not only did she attend aftercare, but she participated in AA and NA groups, rising up through the ranks, becoming an officer. She maintained employment, she maintained housing, and actually her testimony at trial was that she had received multiple advancements at her employment afterwards as well, demonstrating her ongoing commitment to her sobriety.
Did the record tell us what mental disability or disorder your client experienced, and if so, what does it show?
I believe that she testified at trial, Your Honor, that she was diagnosed bipolar, that she had been hospitalized on a couple of occasions as a result of that, and that she had gone into medication management. I believe that testimony came directly from the appellee and not from a therapist that was treating her. We didn't call her mental health provider because the majority of the allegations were related to her substance use, so we brought in her as a witness, her therapist that dealt with that issue specifically. But there was testimony by my client as to the steps that she had taken to maintain her mental health.
Was there testimony about the fitness of the husband? And is that relevant in this inquiry?
If I'm understanding your question correctly, are you asking, did my client testify to the fitness of...
Did anybody? Is there evidence in the record of the fitness of the ex-husband?
There was... I apologize, Your Honor. Yes. There was testimony at trial to that issue. There were incidents that occurred when Jovi went into her father's custody, which actually goes to the best interest argument as well. From the time that Jovi began residing with her father, she went from a happy, well-adjusted child who had had no issues in school to a child who was now in therapy, was on heavy medication. She had been mauled twice by a family dog. There were allegations and reports of ongoing and excessive drinking in the father's home between the father and the stepmother. There had been a report made to CPS after the minor child had contacted family members in distress from that drinking. There was an incident that occurred where the child... former therapist, Jody Johnson, had to withdraw as her therapist due to an incident following a football party where her child was involved in a car accident with Mr. Cure where alcohol may have been involved. There was testimony that Jovianne was struggling at school, that she was having problems making friends, she was having behavioral issues at school, all things that did not start until after she went to live with the defendant, or excuse me, the appellant in this case. So I do think that those things do go to the best interest. Additionally, Jovi herself testified during the trial in an in-chambers testimony in camera with the judge, and she testified that her time at... There was testimony that I believe the court relied upon...
Perhaps we're not going right. to talk about that.
But there was testimony that the court relied upon from that as well in making that best interest determination. And so I do believe, Your Honor, that the court was correct in its determination that Ms. Cure was a fit and proper parent and that there were concerns about the fitness of Mr. Cure, although that was not really the question for the court as to the fitness of Mr. Cure. It was more a question of the fitness of Ms. Cure due to the complaint to modify.
Did the judge make a specific finding as to the fitness of your client?
I believe the court did find, Your Honor, that Ms. Cure was a fit and proper parent and that it was in the best interest of Jovi to be placed back with her. And I do believe the court was correct as well as in finding that this was a transitory situation and not a material change of circumstance.
Transitory because she had successfully completed treatment and maintained sobriety, or transitory because of something else? Is it a focus on the incident, on the assaultive behavior, or on her treatment? What makes it transitory?
I believe, Your Honor, what makes it transitory is that, for one, it's not a circumstance that was likely to last for 6 months or more. Ms. Cure went to treatment immediately, she resolved the issues, and within 90 days, she was able to achieve unsupervised visitation.
Substance use disorders are lifelong.
I agree.
So could it only be transitory because of successful treatment?
I don't think so, Your Honor. I think that what the court looked at was also the standard from Highstand, which is the behavior of the parent in the last year. What they looked at was that Ms. Cure not only obtained treatment, which is something we would expect of any parent in juvenile court or in these types of proceedings, but not only that she had obtained treatment, but that she had taken numerous steps and had demonstrated ongoing sobriety, an ongoing addressing of her substance abuse issue. A substance abuse issue in and of itself should not be enough to constitute a change of circumstances or a material change of circumstances unless a parent ignores it. And I think in this case, the court found that she had not ignored it, that she had taken the necessary steps, and that it was not likely to reoccur given the nature of her sobriety and the likelihood that she would continue both in the groups that she was attending, the programs that she was overseeing as an officer in AA and NA, her ongoing therapy with Ms. Stewam, and her behavior over the course of the prior year, which demonstrated ongoing sobriety. So I think that is what the court looked at when the court tried to determine whether or not this was truly a material change of circumstances, was whether or not Ms. Cure had taken the steps to demonstrate that this was a circumstance that was not likely to reoccur.
Under the transitory standard used by the trial court, would it be impossible for one event of assault to ever be the basis for a successful motion to modify?
I don't believe so. I think that if Ms. Cure had assaulted her minor child and had continued in her substance use, had refused to attend treatment, had refused to participate in ongoing aftercare, I think the court would have found that it was a material change of circumstances. But the fact that this was an isolated incident that was then immediately addressed by the parent, that I think is where that transitory piece came in for the court. Because Ms. Cure did make sure that this was an isolated incident that wasn't likely to reoccur because of her steps that she took afterwards. Had she not taken those steps, I do believe the court would have found that it was a material change of circumstances, and then her behavior afterwards continued to show that this would last longer than that six-month period.
Is that a sliding scale dependent upon the severity of the assault?
I don't believe that either, Your Honor.
So if no matter how bad the assault would have been, as long as she took steps to become a better person later, even if the child went to the hospital for a significant period of time, as long as she took steps later to rectify it, that wouldn't be sufficient?
Well, I think that the standard of material change of circumstance is based on a factual basis, and it's for the court to determine based on the totality of the circumstances. So in a case like that, for example, the court may find that that is not, or that that does reach that, and it's not a transitory situation. But in this particular situation, I think that the court was correct in finding, I see my time is up, may I have a moment to finish my answer?
You may.
Thank you. I think that her steps after that, because of that totality of the circumstance evaluation, I think that in this particular case lends credence to the court's order. And I see that I'm out of time. May I do a quick?
You may.
Thank you. We believe, Your Honor, that the district court, we believe, Your Honors, excuse me, that the district court was correct in its finding that there was no material change of circumstances in this case, and that the best interest in this case for Jovianne was for her to be placed back with her mother, and we ask the court to affirm the lower court's ruling. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Do we have any time for rebuttal?
No, Your Honor.
There is no time for rebuttal. Counsel, that concludes arguments in Cure versus Cure. And you are excused. You may actually leave the courtroom, or you may stick around. We will have